Is this on?
Yes, my lord.
Good. Hello, this is God speaking. Can we dial that down?
Yes, my lord.
Thanks. Welcome, new arrival to the Eternity Ward. Please take a number and make your way down to the left or the right to the waiting room. All you need is there. The refreshments I made just for you. I would tell you to steer clear of the apples. They're forbidden. And the two snakes. I mean, fools. Sorry. That are chewing the fat in the corner, but you probably wouldn't listen anyway. So good luck, I bless you, and on your way.
Welcome to the Eternity Ward, where we flick through old copies of Reader's Digest and chat with our buddies while we wait for an appointment with God. I'm Nick McKinnon.
And I'm Chris Adams.
Hello, Chris.
Hello, Nick.
That's fantastic. What a start. What have you been up to, Chris?
I've been busy. Let's see, since we last spoke, I flew to Melbourne. I went to a wedding vow renewal for two very close friends of mine.
Did you pay for the airline to plant trees on your behalf to offset your carbon footprint?
I guess you'd have to ask the people that paid for my flight. So I'm not sure how to answer that one.
You don't care about the environment.
Well, I did go as part of that trip to World Vegan Day, thank you very much, where they had a great big festival in this massive tent, you know, thousands of people, thousands of vegans all eating vegan food and selling vegan wares and bands playing, and yeah, that was pretty cool.
So you went to your church on Sunday and then went back to your normal life on Monday.
Why is that my church?
Well, because you went to your vegan festival to make yourself feel good about yourself, and then you can go back to eating meat, because then you can tell all your buddies, oh, I went to the vegan festival.
I'm not a vegan, but I am a vegetarian, which was weird because I was there going, hey, guys, I'm sort of like you, but not.
You were the outsider.
10 years ago, you know, vegans and vegetarians were probably close buddies, but I'm like, I don't want anyone to know. I'm here. I don't even want to know.
You are unethical eating those poor eggs.
I sort of felt like if people knew that I'd have 1,000 people standing around me pointing at me preaching, you know, like they were wonderful, beautiful, lovely people. It was a really nice community, but I had the feeling that they were quite intolerant of my views. That's not true.
Don't you know that life begins at conception? So every time you eat that chicken egg, yeah, that's right, murderer.
Murderer, yes. But I can't say they're intolerant. I'm sure they all have family, friends and co-workers and spouses and stuff, and they get along with these people. It was a good day.
They are annoying, Chris. It's okay. You can say it. Vegans are annoying. They're judgmental and they're annoying.
But you can't argue against them because they hold all the ethical ground.
Yeah, because they're right.
That's right.
So that's why it's annoying arguing with people that are right. We know that they're right. We just don't have the moral and ethical standards to go along with what they're saying.
Yeah, okay. We'll leave that conversation about vegans there because I agree with you. But yeah, then I've been in training for a few days, doing self-defense training and stuff. I'm pretty sore.
Don't pick on Chris.
No.
He knows how to block a punch if you go really slow.
I can break a plank of wood with my fist.
Whoa! Sick. I did that too.
Yeah.
People won't know what rock and water is.
No, but everyone should do it. What have you been up to?
I've been doing like a victory lap at school where it's that thing where you quit your job and everyone goes, oh, how will we ever replace you? And I yeah, you're right. You probably won't be able to. I think I might stay for another year and then I'll be able to do it next year as well.
Just do another victory lap.
Yeah, I'll be the John Farnham of chaplaincy. Yeah.
But I hear you've also been watching a bit of sport on TV.
I have been watching sport on TV, Chris. I'm a mad non-sport person. I used to be a real sport person. I love playing sport, but watching sport I often found less interesting. Mm. But yes, the World Cup qualifiers, the not cricket, what's the other one? Soccer. I know my sport. The soccer World Cup. They both have balls, Chris. It's the same. Look, people, I know I'm sounding like I don't know what I'm talking about, but I actually played soccer for decades. So get over yourselves.
All right. And I bring this subject up of you watching soccer because this is what our topic is going to be about.
Soccer.
For the podcast tonight. Yeah, soccer. No, it's not going to be about soccer. We're going to talk for an hour about soccer.
Stop. Leave the podcast on. Don't turn it off.
It's not about soccer.
It's not about soccer. It's about an epiphany I had.
Ah, okay. I like epiphanies.
Me too, except for when it's about vegetarianism, then I don't like them.
Or veganism.
Yeah, no. We'll talk about that another time because I think we both agree we should be vegans, but we're not.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was watching this Honduras versus Australia soccer match and I was sitting there in my green and gold shirt cheering away, go Australia, you bloody legends, you.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
Oi, oi, oi. I wasn't even drunk at this point.
Ooh.
Like I was doing that thing where you feel an affinity with these people wearing the same colour as you. Mm. You know, I was born in Australia. My family's all from Australia. I've grown up in Australia. And when Australia had the Olympics, that was super exciting. And whenever we go to the Olympics, when I look at the medal tally, I look for where Australia is. I couldn't give a shit where Honduras is on the medal tally. And I had this epiphany while watching this game. Honduras is this ridiculously poor country. Like in my normal everyday life, I actually care about poor people, whereas I don't care about rich people. And I was watching this game of rich people versus poor people going, I'm supporting the rich people just because that's the country I was born in. And I felt like a bastard.
Yeah. Well, Honduras are so poor. There was differences in the way they flew over from when we played them in Honduras.
They didn't even fly, Chris. They swam.
They swam. That's how poor.
Yeah. Yeah. They had to hop on the nearest whale that was going across, and that's just how they got over. No wonder they were tired in the second half.
Yeah. Hitch a ride. Yeah. Whereas the Aussies flew back in their own private jet.
That's right. They rang up Malcolm Turnbull and he just flew his private jet.
Yeah.
Yeah. They had these special eyeglasses things. I don't even know what they did, but it made them look like they were from Blade Runner or something.
Mm.
They looked impressive. And they were getting rub downs while they were on the flight, sitting there joking. They didn't care.
No, why would you though? If you're trying to get an edge over another team in a sport and you can get an edge of flying back in comfort and the other team has got to hitch a ride on a whale, then you'll take that every day, right?
They most certainly did.
Yeah. Can't blame them.
Can't blame them.
No.
Guess what, Chris?
We're in the World Cup.
We're in the World Cup. And when the World Cup comes around, guess which country I'm supporting?
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
Oi, oi, oi.
Yeah.
That's right. I won't be thinking about Honduras at all. Just like when I was watching the Honduras game, I wasn't thinking about Syria. Bad luck, Syria. I felt bad about you last month.
Yeah, the Syria game was interesting. I didn't get to watch the game last night between Australia and Honduras because I was at a dinner to celebrate. Someone wanted to celebrate the yes vote, you know, because it meant something to them. So we went out to dinner. But it was the Syria game. That was the one that I had a bit of a feeling like you had. I actually watched that game and I was watching that game thinking these people, I've seen pictures of what Syria looks like at the moment. It's just rubble. How are they supporting a football team that's trying to get into the World Cup? Heck, Italy couldn't even make the World Cup this year. They're a soccer superpower and they didn't make it. And here's Syria, just a bit of a step away from making it. What an amazing story that would be. What an amazing inspiration for the people of Syria if their football team could make the World Cup. And here's Australia standing in the way, bastards.
Are you suggesting, Chris, that Italians should be hopping on boats and fleeing to Syria so they could have a better shot at making the World Cup?
You are twisting my words.
That's what I do. That'd really shock the people hopping on boats in Syria. What's this boat coming the other way?
Oh, dear. But I've always barracked for Australia in so many sports. I've grown up with wearing green and gold, you know, all my life. And I love sport. I love the beauty of sport. I love the contest. I love, you know, so many things about sport. But I was sort of going, how great a story it would be if Syria won. And they made it through. And, yeah, it's a good story if Australia make it through. But it's not that good a story.
You will never be allowed in an Anzac Day service ever again.
Yeah.
And so, Chris, what football team do you support?
The Western Bulldogs.
Who did your dad support?
The Western Bulldogs.
That's a coincidence.
Who did his dad support? The Western Bulldogs. Yeah. No, but I mean, even the Western Bulldogs, they won their first grand final last year in 54 years or whatever. And I was there for their preliminary final. And it was a beautiful moment that means so much, you know, to stand there with thousands of Western Bulldog supporters who have been through the same torment that I've been through for so long.
Yeah, tell those Syrians about your torment, Chris.
My torment doesn't equate to their torment, but my torment is real in what it is.
Okay. Hey, Chris, just tell me to shut up. It's much funnier.
All right, shut up. So beautiful moment. We win the game in the dying seconds, embracing and, you know, all of these Western Bulldog supporters crying and embracing each other and just this feeling of disbelief and euphoria, and it was something magic. I love how we can have these moments of perfection. Humans are very imperfect, but you have this beautiful moment, like for you, you know, maybe it's the reaching over and hitting that perfect slam dunk, or the timing between two players, or it's the tactics, it's the drama, the passion. You don't know what's going to happen in sport. There's so many things I love about it. I still love Australia and Australian sport, but I sort of didn't mind the idea of Syria winning that match. but we like the underdog, right? In Australia, we do barrack for the underdog a lot, right? We don't want to barrack for those on top.
People say that. I kind of agree with that. But then we're just sort of at that age where the kids that are like 8 or 9 or 10 now mm-hmm. are kids that are very aware that Hawthorn won 3 premierships in a row. Guess which club they support?
Hawthorn. Yep.
Yeah. I think it's true if it's not the team you support.
Yeah, you may be right. I also wonder sometimes if the team that I support has influenced who I've become as a person, in the sense that having watching their ups and their downs and their struggles, that I support such an underdog team that maybe I see myself as an underdog, not I see myself as an underdog, that's why I support an underdog team. How much does who we support influence who we are? But they say also that when it comes to sport, that there's a mental thing going on when you watch something that you've like played before, that it sends messages in synaptic pathways. Like if you watch a rower rowing and you've been a rower, you'll go through similar pathways in your brain, which will set off serotonin and will make you feel good. So we can really feel an affiliation with a team and with players, maybe not just physically, but also in how we see all of its heroes and its villains, saints and sinners. We see ourselves in the movement, in the passion and in the drama. There's this shared feeling thing going on.
So yeah. Are you saying that the reason we like underdogs is because we see ourselves as underdogs, because we see ourselves as this small cog in this massive system, and if we see other underdogs win, then we think, hey, maybe we can win too?
I mean, yeah, you just have to look to the western suburbs of Melbourne and Western Bulldog supporters. It's a fairy tale. I was just ecstatic that they finally got past the preliminary final and made the grand final. That was enough for me. But for them to go that one step further, it's just given a lot of people a lot of belief. I think it gave Richmond the belief to win this year. But even if they hadn't won, I can still enjoy a game, even when, you know, a team doesn't win. You might not win the war, but as long as you've won enough battles and you have a decent crack, because it should be about the quality of the contest, not just about winning and losing. I mean, yes, you want to go up against the best, and yes, you want to prevail.
What is wrong with you?
But you want to beat the best.
You sound like a high school sports coach.
What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. I don't know. We like underdogs potentially because we're Australian and we're born of a nation of convicts. We don't have the same sort of class system that exists in Mother England.
Mm. We're not the only country that has that underdog mentality thing. I think that's a yeah. fairly common thing for any lower socioeconomic group. Our identity as a nation in a lot of ways was formed off the back of convicts who were the lower socio classes.
Mm.
Then it sort of makes sense that we like underdogs because we are an underdog. Whereas if we were some rich bunch of people, we might not feel that way. So it's all just selfishness.
Selfishness?
Yeah. It's all just saying, I want what's best for me. I'm an underdog, so I like underdogs.
Mm.
Well, maybe not selfishness, maybe narcissism. How about that? Can I ask you another question?
All right, ask a question.
Were your parents more left-leaning or right-leaning in politics?
Left.
What are you?
Left.
So what religion were your parents?
Christian.
What religion are you?
Christian.
Look at this.
Is there a pattern?
Well, you may not have seen it, Chris, but I hope our dear listeners have picked it up. What colour underwear did your parents wear, Chris?
I don't know. I respected their privacy.
Deary me. Yeah, so I didn't support the same football teams as my parents. I don't know why that is. Every single person in our family has a different football team we supported, which is a bit weird. But we certainly followed the same political leanings, and we certainly follow the same religion. None of our family members turned out to be Muslim, which surprised all of us. I think there is something to do with what you were born into has a massive impact on the person you become. And so in a sense, there's stuff that I think is central to who I am as a person, and none of it was decided by me.
Yeah.
Which I don't think we often think about that as ourselves. We normally think that I chose everything.
Right. So your epiphany in watching the Socceroos play against Honduras or Syria was that you were born into supporting the Socceroos like every other Australian, and you're sitting there going, hang on, I'm supporting the bastards.
That was part of my thinking, but it's just that there was no point in time where I thought, which national soccer team will I support? Mm. It was never an intellectual decision that I made. It was simply I was born in this country, I will support this team.
Mm.
And it was just an automatic process that happened in my brain.
Okay, well, is there something wrong with that?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if you would put a moral judgment on it. I would definitely want to say that I want to know why I am the person that I am. I don't want to leave any stone unturned. I don't want to be uncritical in that.
So it just raises a whole bunch of other questions for you.
So for something as unimportant as which soccer team you support, yeah, it doesn't matter. I couldn't care less whether you support the Western Bulldogs or whether you support GWS or if you support whoever. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to political stuff, I think it matters. When it comes to religion, I think it matters. When it comes to how you treat other people, when it comes to how you see refugees or Muslims or people from other countries or gay people or whatever, I think those are the sort of things that it does matter. And the social environment that you're born into, not just your family, but also your culture, your society, has a massive impact on what your values will be. And you will say that you came to those views yourself, but you're wrong. And I'm wrong. I didn't make up those choices myself. I was born into them.
Mm-hmm.
I chose from a very limited palette.
Right. Just taking a little bit back to sport, I think, you know, sport is a bit of a microcosm of a lot of those other things that you mentioned. And we can see, you know, bad behavior within sport and within that sort of mob mentality. And I mean, even there was the game between New Zealand and Peru, and there were people shining lasers in the eyes of the players to try and distract them, and soccer keepers who have missed saving a goal have been shot and killed by their countrymen. It can be extreme, but yeah.
Well, that's one of the things I didn't mention earlier, that when I was watching that Australia-Honduras game, and this happens pretty commonly for me, but I definitely noticed it in that game that anytime there was some sort of clash between two players, my initial response every single time was the Honduras players were being dirty or the Honduras players were diving.
Mm.
If it was a free kick to Honduras, I went, bloody hell, they're diving again. And if it was an Australian player that got knocked over, I was like, geez, they're a bunch of dirty bastards.
Yeah.
And then you'd see the replay and you go, oh, the Australian bloke really didn't get touched that much. And you'd go, oh, I know, an idiot. But I found that fascinating because, like, it's just an automatic response for me. Mm. And I'm sure you have it with, you know, Western Bulldogs. You can't help it.
I know I can't help it, but I also see a different level between some people are able to take it to extremes and they're what you call a completely one-eyed supporter and they don't see any reason whatsoever or any good play by the other team, you know. They're the enemy. They are the enemy. They lie, they cheat, they need to be destroyed.
And the referee is on the take and he's biased.
Yeah.
And he hates our team because our team is XYZ.
Yeah, I've become a lot more softened over the years about being that one-eyed. But that feeling, as you're saying, it's still there. I still am certainly biased. But I do love it when, you know, you can cheer the opposition who have done something good.
Against your own team?
Yeah. You clap the...
You are lying.
You clap the cricketer that makes 100 for the opposition. It's like, well done.
Yeah, but you don't mean it. It's symbolism. Like, you're doing it while you're saying, you little bastard, I'm going to get you out next ball.
I love players from other teams. You know, I love Sangakkara. I love watching him bat. You know, I love Tendulkar.
So I'm the coach of the Cressy cricket team.
Yeah.
And we were playing a game yesterday, and one of the dudes on our team is a lovely dude, is a pretty decent batsman, and he hit this nice shot, and one of the players on the other team took a ripper of a catch, like a diving sort of catch. The guy on our team just walked straight up to him, gave him a handshake, said, "Brilliant catch, mate," and walked off.
Yep.
And I was like, what a bloody legend.
Yeah.
What a legend. The dude just got caught from an awesome catch and he didn't walk off shaking his head, swearing about how unlucky he was.
And you were having a go at me for talking about it's not just about the winning and losing, it's about the quality of the contest.
I enjoy having a go at you, Chris.
Take that as a compliment. But it has to be about the quality of the contest. That's where the beauty is. You don't want one team just to pummel another team.
That's no.
Boring. It's boring.
It is boring.
Yeah, hear that, New Zealand All Blacks. It's boring.
For any of you basketball fans out there, I used to love watching Golden State Warriors play basketball. Now I hate watching them.
Do they win all the time?
Not only do they win all the time, they win so frequently and by so many points that literally their starters very rarely play in the fourth quarter.
Wow.
Because they're winning by so much, they just go, well, let's take this next quarter of the game off.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Thanks, Kevin Durant.
But we're getting off topic again.
Can I get us back on topic?
Yeah, go for it.
So sport, I think, well, I certainly agree with myself. I don't know whether you do. But sport is not important. It doesn't matter. Like, it's enjoyable. It's like playing a video game. It's fun, but who cares? Whereas these other things that we've talked about do actually matter. That I was born into a left-leaning house and I just became a left-leaning person without having ever actually thought about any of these issues matters. And people that are born into, you know, a racist household and they just grow up with that surrounding them and that's just the worldview they take on without ever really thinking about it, that's a bad thing. So those are the sort of things that actually do matter. And it's the same sort of idea. It's this idea of tribalism that we see ourselves as part of a tribe of people. Anything that comes from our team, we just agree with and we go, yeah, that makes sense. And anything that comes from a group that we don't see ourselves as part of, we just immediately just discount it and find the holes in it. And when I say this, like, this is stuff I do too. This is not me saying other people do it and I'm so good. I'm like, I do that too. I was just describing how it happened for me when I was watching this Australia Honduras game. And all of us do it. And it's not a good thing. And it's part of what it is to be human.
Is all tribalism necessarily a bad thing? I mean, I get what you're saying. At the end of the day, it's just a game. But I would argue with you even just a little bit that, you know, it sort of matters in that it's something that humans do that's positive and it can even be a role model in healing some of society's biases. And it can be a bit like music, which is just making sounds, or like dancing, which is just sort of shaking our bodies. How does that matter? And yet we can come alive and be expressive and experience something.
Dancing and ballet in particular is a beauty unrivaled by anything else in the universe. That's for my mum. She'll appreciate me saying that. There you go, mum.
Yeah, it's these moments of human perfection that I, you know, like to live for. But it's these other things that we're a lot more imperfect at that we definitely need to work on and look at.
How do we start to work out what do I really believe? Like, how do I start to go, holy crap, all of the things that I believe, like all of them, are things that are just a product of my environment or biology as well. Like, you know, the only reason we care about our kids is because we have so few of them. If we were turtles that had 600 kids in a litter, well, bad luck, you ain't looking after every single one of them. And so turtles don't have morals that say, I really need to look after my kids. They just go, oh, good luck, guys. Out you go. And the fit ones survive and the not fit ones die.
Yep. But you were talking about tribalism. That's where you were. Yeah. So tribalism, just another sport analogy. I remember being at the MCG and watching 60,000 people all scream bullshit in unison. Bullshit, because the umpires weren't coming back onto the ground. You know, they weren't taking the covers off. It had stopped raining for half an hour and they still weren't coming back out. That's a beautiful moment, 60,000 people in unison just going, bullshit.
You know, whereas if Australia were losing that game, leave the covers on as long as you want, people. We would be happy with the draw.
What other tribalism things can I remember? I wasn't at this one, but I remember the Cronulla riots. That's tribalism at work, isn't it? People all painted in Australian flags. Tribalism has to get around shared symbols, don't they? Sporting teams have their colours, their emblems, and nations have their flags. Religions have their iconography. Because it's all about identity, isn't it? Everything's about identity. So this is the flags and the colours and the iconography that makes up, you know, who you are. We do need to form an identity as we're growing up. I see young people all the time trying to figure out their identity. And we're social creatures, so belonging to tribes is very natural to want to find belonging. But, yeah, then we can get caught up in mob mentality. We can end up believing really unhelpful things. So I guess you're asking, well, which things do I have that aren't good and that I want to get rid of? So Christian was one that you were born into.
Certainly was.
And that's one that you've struck from the list just recently, right?
So is seeing myself as left wing.
Yeah. So you've just evolved way beyond me.
Well, I do think of myself as very evolved, Chris. Far above all you little earthlings.
But surely you can say that some of the things that you identify with, they can be good, positive, or right things. You can't just say just because you were born into that, that you need to discard that and find something better.
No, but I also have to say, am I being honest, or am I just simply using that as an opportunity to fall back into the comfort that I already have?
Yeah.
So for me, just raising this issue, like that awareness raising sort of thing, is a helpful thing. If someone says, you realize you're only left wing because your parents were, our first response is to go, no, I'm not. I've thought about these issues and I'm very intelligent and I've watched lots of interviews with people I disagree with and saw how stupid they were. That's one of the ways that I moved away from Christianity, which I think I've talked about before, that like I would watch these debates between Christian person and atheist and I'd start off going, oh, isn't that atheist an idiot? Then there'd just be one little part that I go, I don't really have an answer for that. And it would take a long time for those to actually seep in.
I'm just thinking of friends that I know who don't share the political leanings of their parents. Just going, oh, hang on, there's them. And what about those? What about that person? Like, yeah, I do, but they don't. Anyway, what were you going to say?
Well, that's good, actually. That leads me even further back into something else I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
So I read this study that talked about that kids that were brought up in zealous households, whether it be religion or politics or veganism or whatever, anti-corporation, any of that sort of stuff. Any kids that are brought up in those sort of households, they adopt those beliefs until they don't. So they hold on to them and they fight for them until they get to a point. Because they're so passionate about these subjects, they end up engaging with people who don't hold that view.
Right.
And so that forces them to actually come across people that if they were just ambivalent about all these issues, they wouldn't even come across. Whereas because they've been raised to be so zealous, at some point they're sort of forced by that passion to come across people who hold different points of view. Mm. And like I was talking about before, like our first response and probably our first 100 responses aren't they stupid and they're wrong and I'm right. But at some point, something will seep through. At some point, there'll be a doubt placed into you that goes, geez, I really don't have an answer for that. And that's difficult, but I still have all these other questions that I know are right. Just those doubts just start to be placed in. And so often university is a place where this happens for a lot of young people. They go into these university places where they've come from their own households where everyone believes the same thing. They get to this institution where it doesn't matter what household you've come from. The thing we hold up as important is ideas, and that you need to be able to back up your ideas. And so all of a sudden people just lose their identity and they're like, holy crap, what the hell do I do? And so a lot of people lose their religion at colleges. A lot of people change their ideology, their political leanings, all that sort of stuff. Like we've talked about Peter Rowlands before. He's a theologian dude, but a fairly radical one. One of the things that he talks about that I love, he runs this course called Atheism for Lent.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
So in Christianity, if you don't know, Lent is this time, 40 days, where Christians will spend time fasting or repenting about something or giving up something, because that will purify you. Because all of us can fall into patterns of behavior where we hold up things that are idols that aren't the real thing that we need to be focusing on. Peter Rollins has this idea of atheism for Lent, where instead of giving up, you know, food or giving up alcohol, he has this idea of, well, let's give up faith for Lent. And yeah. So it's this idea that I am going to force myself to, I'm not going to go to church for these 40 days. I'm going to remove myself from Christian communities, and I am going to expose myself to the best thinking of atheists. I'm not just going to focus on whoever I think is a stupid atheist and who has stupid ideas, but I'm going to force myself to look at the best arguments in atheism. And the idea of that is that when you expose yourself to the best ideas of people you disagree with, it forces you to look at your beliefs much closer, and it forces you to actually work out what is true in what you believe and not just allow you to just quickly and easily pass off the views of the other and say, just, you know, paint them as silly and whatever.
I've also heard him explain that whole process as, because we come already with our perception of who God is, we have God in this box. We've got this picture of who God is, and to let that go and be critiqued by the best of atheism, not in a sense to lose faith, but to then rediscover your faith anew at the end of that time without all of those preconceptions that you went in with. Yeah, I've considered doing it a number of times. I haven't done it yet because you can sign up to his program and stuff, but yeah.
So I like how you explain that, but I think I would say the point of this pyrotheology sort of idea is to lose your faith, but not necessarily not to pick it up at the end. But you want to lose your faith. You want to lose everything. And yeah, then at the end of it, work out which bits are worth picking up again. And if faith's worth picking up at the end of it, brilliant, pick it up.
I mean, yeah, if you're not putting it on the line, if you're just playing it safe, then you're not really doing it.
But I don't think most people go through that of actually losing their faith, yeah, of actually losing their left-wingness or losing their right-wingness. I don't think we do it. I don't think enough of us do it. And I think we all need to force ourselves out of our communities, out of our comfort zones and say, I am not left-wing, I'm not right-wing, I'm not Christian, I'm not Buddhist, I'm not atheist, I'm not anything. And force ourselves to look at everything and say, what's real, what's worth picking up.
All right. Well, you've left a bunch of stuff behind. You're in that place at the moment.
Well, hey, I'm still doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, one of the big things for me at the moment is the left wing, right wing thing. I'm forcing myself to consume right wing media instead of left wing media because I think the stuff we immerse ourselves with has a massive effect on how we view any political debate.
So you're leaving the left wing side of politics behind. You've left Christianity behind. What else do you think that you were born with, that you were sort of indoctrinated into, other than a green and gold jersey, that you feel that you need to address?
Those are the ones that I've become aware of.
Right.
So presumably there are others that I'm not yet aware of. But if you're aware of some, Chris, I would like you to raise them for me so I can struggle with them too.
I was just wondering the scope of what we were going to be talking about, I guess. So,
So what things do you have that you hold from when you're a kid, and convince me that you haven't just kept them because you were brought up in it?
All right. Well, I was brought up within Christianity and I am still calling myself a Christian, so there's one. But I walked away from that for 15 years. I didn't step foot in a church for 15 years. I'm still not really stepping foot in a church, but I have a form of faith. So I think I went on my own journey of discovering what I thought about that and that whole story. It's still informed by what I was brought up with and what I was born into. I was born into, you know, Christianity. I didn't experiment and play with other religions in the time that I was away. Yeah, so that's one that I still hold, but I feel like I went on a journey of walking away from a lot of that and finding my own way back, my own journey. So it's something that I feel, I guess that's why people put a lot of stock in being a born again Christian. You know, there's a new decision, a new choice. It's not just this one steady stream from birth to where they're up to. But there are many people born into Christianity and have remained a Christian and feel very strongly about where they are. And that doesn't necessarily make that an incorrect place to be.
It doesn't, but I think you should be suspicious of it. Like, what are the odds?
What are the odds? Okay, so if you were born into Islam, you were born into Buddhism, you were born into a jungle in the Amazon, wherever you were born into, we've had this discussion before. It's weird that we're all hallucinating about the same thing. You know, it's, I don't think it matters what you call God. There's something that interweaves them, that they're sort of, they bleed together a little bit. And I think that that thing is, if it's real, is God.
Was it about Scientology that you think bleeds into your religion?
The quest for money.
Yep, good point.
I don't. I do not have respect for Scientology. But I guess there's people there that are searching.
When I hear you speak about religion, it sounds like you think they're all basically the same thing. They're all pointing to the same thing.
Yeah, I reckon. And even if you were born into Scientology, right? If you were a child, you were born into that world because it's a fairly new religion. You know, the people who set it up, I don't trust them, right? But the people who were born into it, well, that's what they were born into. If God's findable, why can't they find God through there? I mean, Christians will say, Jesus is the way. You can't get to God except through Jesus. For me, this is why I still like Christianity, because I think it does apply to everyone. If Jesus is the way, then the crucifixion and the resurrection means that's for everyone. And Peter Rowlands, he was asked, do you deny the resurrection? Do you deny that? And he's going, yes, I deny the resurrection. Yes, I deny the resurrection every time I lie. I deny the resurrection every time I don't help my neighbor. I deny, you know, that's when he's denying it. So I think if you live fully, as in if you live honestly, if you live fully, if you live searchingly, if you seek, that's when you are living fully before God. So I don't think it really matters what it's called.
But see, what Peter Rowlands is doing there is the same thing as when Christians say they hear from God. They don't really hear from God. They do not hear an audible voice in their head. And Peter Rowlands is using clever words to avoid the question, because he doesn't believe in the resurrection. And if he says that, then it hurts his book sales. And no one does his Atheism for Lent course because he's not really a Christian.
Probably wouldn't call himself a Christian. But the question is, does he believe?
He doesn't believe there's a God.
What makes you say that he doesn't believe that there is a God? He doesn't believe there's some higher power?
I'm happy to post you the link at some point. He wrote it on his blog.
All right.
So the interesting thing to me is that you have this idea that all these religions are basically pointing to the same thing. It's just us fallible human beings best attempt at connecting with the whatever.
Yeah.
But then you also bring it back to Christianity. You also say that Jesus is what it's about, that all these people, you know, all these religions are pointing to the same thing. And that makes sense because Jesus was there for everyone and that Jesus' salvation was for everyone.
I think the Christianity story is crazy. It's so crazy. It has to be true. Right? I don't know. I believe God is, and Jesus, that story is inclusive of all people. It's not exclusive. So the tribalism of the different religions and, yeah, I don't know. We're one tribe, but we're pretty broken.
Like, in what sense are you a Christian then?
Not much of one. There's not much sense that I am.
Yeah, what does that mean to you if you think that we're all the same?
Yeah, in what sense if we're all the same, but informed by different concepts that we were born into? And there's no one person with all of the right answers. But I reckon if you take the best of yours, you know, and you be genuine and honest and questioning and you seek, and in the Jesus story where he is the way and that's inclusive and provided to all, it's, you know, like done already. I think focusing on that helps me to live most fully before God. Hence, I call myself Christian.
So who is a non-Christian in your eyes?
The Christians who are exclusive.
Christians and non-Christians.
Like the exclusive brethren, you know, I'm like going, why are you exclusive? What's the point in being exclusive? That's, you know, it's just us, just our little camp that are going to heaven. And
well, that's what God does. He separates the sheep and the goats.
All right. Just reckon exclusivity is wrong. So who are the non-Christians? I sort of don't think that it matters. I mean, it matters in the sense that we end up with all of these tribes and they do things to each other and they do things to themselves. Like, I don't want to save people from hell because I don't believe in that. I don't feel compelled to do that. So the things that we believe, you know, can compel us to do certain things to other people. be it kill them or whatever. I don't want to save people from hell a lot, but I do want to save people from their own crap. And so this is the stuff that you're talking about, is that a lot of this stuff that we're born into can turn out to be our own crap, right? So that's what I'm interested in saving people from, and I hope other people are interested in saving me from my own as well, because I got plenty.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So if you're saying it doesn't matter whether you see yourself as a Christian or a non-Christian.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, am I hearing that right?
Well, yeah, pretty much. Because it doesn't matter to me that you don't call yourself a Christian. It doesn't change how I have always seen you and feel about you. You're still Nick.
So if it doesn't matter, and we acknowledge that seeing myself as part of a tribe can be a bad thing, not always, but can be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Why hold any of those labels?
Because it's part of the identity that I've woven for myself that makes the most sense for me to live the most fully.
Yeah, but Christianity is it doesn't mean anything to you.
It does mean something to me. It's the story that makes the most sense.
So what does it mean to you?
What does it mean to me?
Maybe I haven't heard that properly. Yeah. What does being a Christian mean to you?
For me, it means, so it's the story of Jesus, that God has been amongst us. I remember you even asking in the first podcast, where were you? Well, God was here at some point. That's part of the story. God was here.
And past tense.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah, that bit is a past tense. Physically, not present right now. No, but physically was present. You know, if you believe in a creator of the universe, that the creator of the universe would come and be a person amongst human beings and experience what life was like, the joys and the pain and every, like the Bible doesn't go into much, but there was a whole life there. When I walk around, I see my neighbors, I see the person driving the car going the other way, and I go, wow, that person has a life. They have an entire life. They've lived an entire life. They have a family. They have things that they care about, things that they want. They're angry about stuff. They're a full, complex person the way I am, and that's everyone, whether they're from Honduras or whatever, everyone has this life, and God spent time experiencing it the way that we do. And then there was this whole transaction that took place. But that story, it means something to me that, I don't know, I don't feel connected to God much of the time at all, but through that moment, all of humanity is forever connected to God. So it's something like that.
Is Biz a Christian? Biz is Chris's wife. Is Biz a Christian?
Yes.
Is that a yes because she calls herself that or because you do?
She would call herself that.
So are Westboro Baptist Church people Christian?
Yes.
And so the Exclusive Brethren are Christian?
Yes, because they all identify as Christian. Yeah.
Okay. That's what I find really weird, that I am not like them.
Yeah.
And so whatever label they're using is weird.
Yeah, I'm not like a lot of Christians, and that's part of why I used to want to let the label go. As we talked before, people have a perception when you say you're a Christian of what that is. Then I go, but that's not me.
But so Christianity is a belief system. It's not explaining what color your skin is. It's not explaining what country you were born into. It's a belief system.
Mm.
So if you're saying that I subscribe to these beliefs, if someone else says they do and they have completely different beliefs, and not only that, but like, I think you would acknowledge that your views on a lot of Christian doctrine are very different to what the mainstream and traditional views of Christianity would be.
Which means that I'm probably very wrong about a lot, because standing alone, the chances of me being right get slimmer and slimmer. But, and this doesn't make it right, but some tribes, some groups, some people who label themselves aren't going to listen to someone outside of that. And so if I'm within that and I want to be able to influence other people's thinking within that, then that can be a better place for me to do it. And if we share a common frame of reference like Jesus and like calling ourselves Christians, then we can start talking.
Yeah, it's funny. I keep bringing up Peter Rollins because I like him. He talked about that Christian was meant to mean the rejection of all identities, including Christianity.
Yeah, die to self, yeah.
And so in that sense, I'm a Christian because I love the idea of rejecting all identities, including Christian.
Welcome back, Nick. Yes.
There we go.
We gotcha.
Well, Peter Rollins both got me out of Christianity and got me back into it. Like, I love the idea that we need to detach ourselves from all forms of identity. I think that's the cure for tribalism, that if we stop seeing ourselves as any of these dividing labels and we just see ourselves as, I was going to say human, but not even human, because then you've got different species.
Yeah.
But if we just see ourselves as we are sentient beings and any other sentient being, like, we're not all equal because, you know, the more sentient you are, the more capacity you have to feel pain and euphoria. For me, that's a far more helpful label to use, sentient beings. So I see myself as part of that. Mm. And a rock, I don't care about. Mm. Whereas putting up things like Christianity and any other religion or left wing or right wing, the Liberal Party, Labor Party, Democrat, Republican, I don't care about any of that, because it just ends up that because I can't help myself, because I still see those Honduras people as my immediate reaction is they're diving, they're violent, dirty players. I can't help that initial reaction. But if I can force myself to reject all identities, then that can help me to just see myself as part of everything else.
Yeah, I like it. And when we're not part of everything, when, say, patriotism becomes like a lynch mob under a flag, but I hate that, or when ideology means wisdom and logic go unheard, all of that, I mean, it's hard to overcome all of this habitual bias and tribe mentality, you know, especially when we were born into it.
I do think the answer for tribalism is becoming more and more aware of it.
Oh, yeah.
The more aware you are of your own biases, you won't notice it straight away, but, you know, you'll notice it happen and then you go, oh, crap, there it was again. And the more you do it and the more you notice it, I think that will over time help you to move away from it and move towards an enlightened version of yourself.
Mm. You're asking people to drop everything.
Reject all identities, people.
Reject all identity. We spend all of our teenage years going into adulthood creating an identity, and you want everyone just to reject their identity. Is that potentially dangerous? I don't know, because I think our identity sort of forms certain structures which can definitely be unhelpful, but is there something quite helpful about identity as well?
Yeah, I think there's probably some confusion going on probably in my own mind about the word identity.
All right.
So I think I would want to separate between like label identities, like
I'll see if I can figure out what you're trying to say.
Go.
So are you trying to say that in trying to figure out who you really are, that you want to reject all the iconography, all the colors, the emblems, the brands and labels, all that sort of stuff, that what it's really about is finding a pure version of you? Is that it?
Yeah. So I want you, Chris, to stop seeing yourself as a Christian and stop seeing yourself that Christianity is really helpful for you to get your morals and values and blah, blah, blah. And take responsibility and go, my identity is around love. My identity is around I want the best things for all sentient beings. Because I think you do that anyway.
Yeah, right.
And because you have those values, when you read the Bible, you attach those values and identities that you already have innate within you. Any of the bits of the Bible that confirm with that, you go, yep, that's what Christianity is. That's why I'm a Christian. And any of the bits that are anti that, the kill your kid because they swear at you, you go, well, I don't know how that fits in. It doesn't make any sense. That's not Christianity. It's in the Bible, just like all the good bits are. The only thing that's different is you have morals and they're good ones.
You've come back with this argument so many times.
Because it's right.
When you said the bits that you believe in the Bible, like, you know, love your neighbor or whatever, you just take that on board and you don't question that. I was going, oh, shit, you're right. I don't. I just take that on board. So I was really challenged by that, but I'm going, hang on. No, that's a Jesus bit. I don't question the Jesus bits the same way that I would question the rest of the Bible, you know, because
I'm looking forward to this because
the words from Jesus that are in the Bible are the only bits that I can attribute to actually being the words of God, because I believe Jesus was the Son of God.
Because people wrote that Jesus was God. You trust those people that wrote it.
Yeah.
You don't trust the people that said that God told me this in the Old Testament. You don't trust those people. But you trust the people that say Jesus said this and he is God.
Yes.
Because?
Because, all right.
I'm looking forward to this because too.
We were not wrapping it up.
I'm being such an arsehole.
We're not wrapping it up. No, I can answer this. Well, when you say I don't trust those other people in the Bible, I do trust them that they were trying to explain the best that they could and trying to convey an experience. But yeah, when it comes to Jesus, I'm going to trust those words more. And that's because I believe that Jesus was the Son of God. I'll choose to believe that. And there are four Gospels. I mean, it's not climate scientist peer review, but there's a lot more data there. There's a whole different bunch of sets of eyes. And from those experiences, I feel more confident to draw particular conclusions. But as wild as the whole Jesus story is, I do sort of ask myself and ask my, you know, soul, does it ring true? And as much as your own experience can't inform somebody else, I think you need to listen to your own heart and your own experience. I remember when I did the stupid sinner's prayer thing. You know, the sinner's prayer?
Hey.
What?
You mean the Lord's Prayer?
No, not the Lord's Prayer. The sinner's prayer.
What's the sinner's prayer?
The sinner's prayer is when you become a Christian. A lot of people lead you through the sinner's prayer, which is they show you, you know, a few verses from here and a verse from here. You know, it's essentially saying that you recognize that you're sinful and broken and you see Jesus and God as your Lord and Savior. And if you accept him into your life, you'll be forgiven and receive eternal life. And
yeah, I remember that one. It often came about when there was that keyboard music, and people up the front with flashy lights. That's what I remembered it.
Yes, because it was the one that you get taught to lead people to Christ. And I got led through that.
Was it at a concert?
No. It was laying on the road, staring at the stars, halfway up a mountain with a mate of mine. And because we were talking about all this sort of stuff, about what I believe, because I hadn't been a Christian for like 15 years, but I was talking about that I do believe in something, and he eventually said, well, what are you waiting for? Let's just do this. Let's do this. So we did it. And as much as I hated this thing, and I don't really like this sinner's prayer thing, I don't know. It felt like something happened. So I have to acknowledge that, hey, maybe something did happen. Maybe something happens to other people. You know, it felt like something happened. So there are things, there are things about it, that the whole story, that make me go, there's something about the Jesus thing that I'm still drawn to.
I've had the same experience as what you just described. Well, I mean, not exactly the same, but
yeah,
the feelings you're describing, I resonate with entirely. Mine wasn't lying on my back halfway up a mountain, but I just don't trust myself. I just don't trust that I didn't just make all that up myself.
Yeah, I guess I just give myself a bit more credit for some reason.
And so you should. You're a better person than me, Chris.
As if.
That was Chris that made that noise, not me, just so you know that.
As if. No, I'm not better than you, but guess what?
God thinks you're a better person. You're going to be a sheep and I'm going to be a goat.
You're not better than me either. You can think I'm as wonderful as whatever you think. That's fine. But I've got a lot of crap. So do a lot of other people. And so I want to help people get through that. And maybe you're challenging me to help people get through that is to, yikes, challenge them a lot further than I thought I would.
I want every human being to challenge themselves. And I want other people to challenge me too. I value that enormously. Those sort of conversations where you have that moment of going, holy crap, maybe I'm wrong. I love that feeling of that epiphany sort of feeling of, geez, I've been wrong this whole time.
You love that feeling. You're a weirdo.
I am a weirdo. That's true. I am a weirdo. There's no doubt about it.
That's okay. If more people loved being wrong, I think we'd be in a better place. I don't know. Where does that come from for you? You know, even a lot of young people I see are too scared to admit that they've done something wrong to me, even though I'm not the one that's going to judge them. I'm not going to be mean to them. I'm not going to hit them or whatever they normally experience, but they're just so scared to be wrong about anything. It's this massive fear. You can't admit that you're wrong. And we see that in our politicians and stuff. They don't want to apologize for anything. Don't want to have to say sorry for anything. So if you're wrong, you'll just say you're not. That's what happens a lot now. We've got all this, so much bullshit.
Yep. Yep. Plenty.
Yeah, people just make up what they reckon the truth is. But I guess that sort of thing's been going on for a long time. Religions.
Chris.
What?
How dare you attack religion? That's my job.
All right. Atheists.
That's better. No, I don't know why I even said that. You're allowed to attack every religion other than your own.
No, can't let you have all the fun. But in rounding this off, going full circle, our idea for this originally was, you know, emerging from the womb, from what we were born into. I think that's where we've gotten to, right?
And I want it to be a constant thing. Like, I want to constantly be being reborn. I want to constantly be reimagining who I am, the things that I believe. Like, I don't want it to be a static thing where I'm reborn and then done, finished.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can cling to this identity for the rest of my life and then be scared about coming across people who view things differently. What about you?
Yeah, it's a challenge, whether it's from Jesus or you, both scary. But yeah, to scrutinize the words and read between the lines of all that was imprinted into my genes and my psyche and by the tribes and by family. And I guess, yeah, I want to do that. And I will do that as I do everything else. I'll go into that half-heartedly.
Wonderful. One thing I was just thinking about, like, how I'm able to be so self-critical about the things that I've been brought up in. I think I'm really lucky in that my wife, my parents, my family, my friends, none of those relationships that I have are dependent on any of these things we've been talking about. Like, if I come out as a Hindu tomorrow, none of those people are going to reject me, not one of them. And if I come out as being a right-wing person, none of them will reject me. There'll be some pretty heated arguments probably, but none of them will think I'm a terrible person. And that allows me the freedom to do that. Whereas if I felt there was going to be some sort of personal cost, some sort of social cost, that makes it so much harder. So for me, as a father, as a husband, as a friend, I want to be someone who is always accepting of different points of view. And I think that's one thing that all of us can do, that we can all be better at supporting people to best find out who they are.
Like you were talking earlier about people who are sort of overzealous in pushing people to believe what they want them to believe. And I feel I'm lucky like you in the sense that, you know, I walked away, but there was always this unconditional love that I could always come back. And so that's a lesson that I learned. It served me, and I want to be able to serve others with that same sort of unconditional love.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, with that,
we smile because you can hear it in your voice when you smile.
And we should all go out and purchase our Russia 2018 Australian Socceroos merchandise.
Aussie, Aussie, Aussie.
Oi, oi, oi.
Yeah, it will be fun to cheer them on.
It will be. The good news, Chris, is that once we get to the World Cup, we really are the underdogs.
That's true. So thanks for listening again. We're sorry for all the sport references. Catch you next time on the Eternity Ward.
Peace.
Out.
God here again. Are you shaking your head incredulously or nodding in approval? Well, if you got something out of this episode, you could really help those poor idiots by contributing to or supporting the Eternity Ward. You can leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you listen to it. You can share it on social media or discuss it in your blog, podcast, or fellowship group. Subscribe, like, nod your head, raise your fist, send a hallelujah. I don't know, but don't send a prayer because I'm kind of busy right now. Join the discussion in the comments section, ask questions, and do come back and join us again here on the Eternity Ward. We'll be right back.